lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil,
and Janice.
Good evening, and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for this Tuesday, June 28th. We are streaming to you and broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, Canada, where it's a warm, probably about to rain, hot summer evening. Song Talk Radio is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. They can be fresh newbies or established professional songwriters. Together we'll share tips, we'll share techniques, and we're going to share some cool things found together, and we all become a little bit better at writing songs. That's our hope. I am your host, Bruce Harrett, and joining me tonight, as always, are the intrepid members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. Tonight they are Neil Modi.
Good evening.
And filling in for Phil tonight, Janice Ho.
Hello.
And bravely managing our social media onslaught, the one and only, the fabulous Nicole DiDonato.
Woo.
Hello.
Oh, yeah, she doesn't have her own mic. And that is Italian, yes. Now, tonight, every week we put our song lyrics up on the website. So if you're listening in, you might want to go to our website, songtalk.ca. Why should they do that, Janice?
Well, because we're about to have a very special episode where we analyze unusual lyrics of three different songs, and the audience will get much more out of it if they're actually following along with the words, because sometimes it's hard to actually pick out what the singer is actually singing.
Yes, exactly. They'll be there in black and white right on the website. So don't forget, we always love hearing from you. So send your thoughts, complaints, corrections, and recipes to feedback at songtalk.ca, and you can find us on Twitter at songtalk.ca. Radio. During the show, please send us your comments and questions, and we'll share them in real time. You can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, and now you can subscribe to our podcast feed via the iTunes podcast directory or at Stitcher.com. If you like the show, please rate us and leave a positive review there. That helps the show get discovered by new songwriters. And of course, stop by our website to follow the lyrics and the bouncing ball at songtalk.ca. Find out also how you could be a guest on our show. However, Janice, tonight, and Neil and Nicole, guess what? We have no guest.
No.
Aww. But guess what? We have a theme show. Yay!
Yay!
Every few weeks, we dedicate an entire hour to a particular aspect of songwriting. Tonight, we dive into the strange and always surprising world of songs with unusual lyrics. And we're going to do three different songs. Each of the hosts tonight brought in their own song. Janice has brought in
Paranoid Android by Radiohead.
By Radiohead. And Neil, what did you bring?
I brought a song by the band They Might Be Giants called A Self Called Nowhere.
And I brought a Jimmy Webb tune from 1968 called MacArthur Park. Now, those of you who were around in 68, we're not going to do the Richard Harris version, which is the original recording, was a version of a really huge hit, over 7 minutes long, on the radio. This was the 60s.
Incredible.
Remember? And it went something like this. Spring was never waiting for us, dear. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. So that was kind of like that.
Where did Bruce go?
My voice is broke. Wasn't that a good, that was a really good Richard Harris impression,
awesome.
Wasn't it? Kind of screwed my voice up there, though. So we're going to be doing that. And Janice, why don't you start us off with a, you had some good questions about unusual lyrics.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think even before we get to that part, when I first heard we were doing this show and was asked to bring in a song with unusual lyrics, I said, well, what does unusual mean, right? Mm. So, I mean, how do you guys kind of define unusual?
Well, it wouldn't be unintelligible. It would be where it's not clear what the lyrics mean. So they're either written like a John Lennon song, Goo 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 Joob or something, expert, textbert, those kind of things, which is plays on words and things.
Right.
Or they may be just like other nonsense lyrics, or they have something like this song. I went, looked at a whole collection of unusual songs. I like this one. When banana skins are falling, I'll come sliding back to you. So that, you know, in the musical theater, I'll give you a little sidebar here. Mm-hmm. In the musical theater, we call those charm songs. So you would write your song for the leading lady, which would be the big love song, or the leading man. You'd have the big dance number song, and then you'd have an unusual song. And a song like, Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes and Little Lambsy Divey, a Kiddly Ivy too, wouldn't you? That's from my parents' age. But those are charm songs, they were called in the musical theater. They're unusual. They have a bit of a oddness to them. Yeah. What do you think of when you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess because there are songs that have sort of multiple interpretations or maybe a double meaning, but I don't think we're quite talking about that, right? We're talking about lyrics that really kind of at the you know, at first blush, like kind of just don't make sense to the person, really make them kind of pay attention and think, like, what is this even about? Mm-hmm. What do you think, Neil?
Yeah, I think to a large extent that's true. I mean, the songs we selected are, upon first examination, they are unusual. And when we proposed the show, we're like, are we going to call it weird songs? Are we going to call it songs with unusual lyrics? Are we going to call it songs with strange lyrics? Like, it is difficult to pin down the language as to how you define these. But I think, you know, as far as nonsensical, I think they can be nonsensical, but they could also be that the metaphor being used is very obscure and it's very well hidden, or it's very deliberately deeply hidden.
Okay, and so then what do you guys see as the purpose of this type of song in a world where we're, you know, in the songwriting world where we're always sort of like cognizant of, you know, structure and making sure things make sense and relate to people or communicate a certain message? You know, why would a songwriter choose to communicate the story through these unusual, sort of hard to decipher, sometimes nonsensical lyrics?
Well, because sometimes it's not a story. Sometimes it's just a thought or a concept or some kind of abstract idea about something where there is no narrative, and maybe a more obtuse metaphor-driven lyric is the way to go about it, is the best way to express it. And on top of that, I think the ability for the listener to be able to introduce their own interpretation is can be valuable. I mean, not to say that a story song is not equally valuable, but just, you know, that is an aspect to it that a straightforward narrative story song really doesn't give you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's just a challenge. For example, Neil and I wrote a song together about brake pads on a car.
Oh, yes, I remember
that. So we wanted a song from the brake pads point of view. And I think, well, actually, did you write it, Neil, or did we write it together?
The three of us started writing it together, you, I, and Phil.
Oh, live on the air, we decided. Could we write a song live on the air about brake pads?
Yeah, right? I mean, we got as far as like a verse and half a chorus or something. Yeah. But then, yeah, months and months later, I did just tackle it myself.
Yeah, it turned out fine. No, the thing is, I think sometimes songwriters want a challenge.
Yeah.
Especially if you're writing a lot of different songs, and sometimes you just want to break out. I'll be telling you a bit of a story about MacArthur Park and why Jimmy Webb decided to do this. Sometimes it's a challenge. Sometimes you just want to throw out all of the rules and conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And people who have a talent and experience, so they know the rules and conventions, and they're musical enough to be able to throw them out and still make something interesting. I think it's just really, it's that creative yearning to do something different.
Yeah.
And you also want to just make people laugh sometimes. Like, I don't imagine the song about the banana skins falling was a serious song. I think he was like, let's have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do you guys find that the style of writing or of unusual lyrics is typically found in certain genres, or they suit certain genres better than others?
I don't know about genres, but they certainly suit bands more than they suit solo.
Why is that, do you think?
I think because when you're listening to a solo artist, the expectation is there that they're gonna somehow bury their soul and kind of you know, like wear their emotions out on their sleeves and that sort of thing. And of course, this isn't a rule, there are exceptions on both sides, but I think by and large the ones that come across as a band, they can kind of get away with it more.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not necessarily, because now you're talking about multiple people writing a song. So how do you bury the soul when you've got four souls?
Four souls to bear. Yeah, I think probably also we must remember there's a whole bunch of very unusual lyrics that were never popular and we don't have access to them, right? So, you know, the music world is so broad and so huge. It would be great, actually. I'll put out a call to all our listeners tonight if you want to just email or tweet in. Let us know a song that you know that may not be a big hit, but it has a really cool lyrics, and we'll mention it on the air, and people can go and check it out.
Or for that matter, just tweet in your thoughts. I mean, we brought in three songs here, but there are many others, so tweet in what you think is the one that stands out as the song, you know, that has unusual lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we?
Let's hear one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the first one is called a self called Nowhere. Neil, do you want to set that up?
Yeah. So the self called Nowhere is from a band called They Might Be Giants, and this is sort of one of their mid '90s albums, which is actually one of my favorite albums, called John Henry. And They Might Be Giants, just a bit of a precursor on They Might Be Giants. They're a Brooklyn-based duo, basically. They're both named John, John Linnell and John Flansburgh. And they literally started out with like a guitar, a saxophone, and a drum machine, and did little demos in their apartment, and you know, grew from there. And they do have a sort of... this is what I was talking about the band idea, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all of their songs are very detached. You listen to their songs and you learn nothing about them. You know what I mean? Like, you actually don't get any introspection into their personal lives or what they're going through, or, oh, that's kind of a struggle or whatever. I mean, they write a lot of songs about science, for example. Mm-hmm. They even did like a kids album of like educational songs that are kind of science based, and they do that sort of thing. And to me, they're the kind of kings of strange songs. Like, a lot of their songs, over 90% of them, I think, I have no idea what they're about, but they're great turns of phrase, they're great images, and things that kind of pop out, and they're perfectly singable and catchy for the most part. And you know, they're just I prefer to call them unique, because there's no one I know of that's quite like that.
Cool.
Well, let's hear it. So this is a song called, a self called Nowhere.
A self called Nowhere. I just want to point out one other thing.
Yeah.
The top of, take note, if everyone's looking at the lyrics, songtalk.ca or on Twitter, I think Nicole just tweeted it out. This was one of my all-time favorite lyrics. The top of the second verse starts out, "Standing in my yard where they tore down the garage to make room for the torn down garage." I just love the way that lyric sort of folds in on itself.
Yeah, I love that too.
Anyway, aside from what the rest of the song is about, I just love that lyric.
All right.
All right, They Might Be Giants with a self called Nowhere.
I'm sitting on the curb of the empty parking lot of the Star where they let me play the organ. I'm waiting for my ride, but I want to wait inside the Star where they let me play the organ. But I'm thinking of a wooden chair in the room at the top of a stair, and I'm looking down the stairwell at the vanishing dawn and the map of the spot. Let me take you there. The dotted line surrounding the mind of a self called Nowhere. It's a thing named it in a bottomless pit. You can't see it there. The sunken head that lies in the bed of a self called Nowhere. Torn down garage. I'm looking for my car, but I must have sold my car when I needed to buy an electric organ. But I'm thinking of a wooden chair in the room at the top of a stair, and I'm looking down the stairwell at the vanishing dawn on the map of the spot. Let me take you there. The dotted line surrounding the mind of a self called Nowhere. It's a thing made in the bottomless pit.
Okay, that was a self-called Nowhere. And by thy, They Might Be Giants, who are John Linnell and John Flansburg. Well, that was very cool. And while unusual lyrics, I was finding that I was getting some pretty clear sense of place and time and weirdly some metaphors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the lyrics... When you said that they don't really bare their soul, I think there's got to be something somewhat autobiographical about wanting to play the organ. Mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. But the whole concept of a self called Nowhere, this kind of, it's like existential angst or something, right? Especially mm-hmm, the sunken head that lies in the bed of a self called Nowhere. And it. What did you think, Janice?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it just all sounded like a bad dream. And it was kind of cool the way that they, like, I could almost imagine it happening as though I was dreaming, like this very vivid, strange, like, series of events. And I was trying to interpret what the heck does this song mean? And I kind of started thinking that it had to do something with self-identity, and perhaps their take on it is kind of anti-identity, right? And so, like, these references to the thing called it, right? In the bottomless pit, dot on the vanishing dot on the map of the spot. These things that kind of seem very sort of defined or tangible and, you know, that sort of like juxtaposition. So, but I couldn't really say into words that this is what the song was about. And I kind of liked it that way. I kind of liked being mesmerized and confused.
what attracted you, Neil? You chose it.
Well, again, for one thing, that one lyric that I pointed out before before we played it, I think to a large extent, it's pretty much like Janice described. Like, it is like a really weird dream. Mm-hmm. It's like there's these images of sitting on the curb, and in an empty parking lot where something they used to let me play the organ, kind of thing. Like, there's a bit of a loneliness aspect to it, and a bit of an isolation. And then I really love the internal rhymes in the chorus. Vanishing dot on the map of the spot, dotted line surrounding the mind, it pit.
Right.
You know,
it's very well constructed for an unusual lyric.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to say that you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on the ever-popular radio station CJRU 1280 AM. Back to you, Neil.
So, actually, there's one thing. I want to point out a website that I don't know if our audience has ever heard of this, or you guys ever heard of it, songmeanings.com.
Yes.
Which is a great resource, because it's kind of like, you know, someone will post up a lyric to a song, and many, many, many songs are on that website, and then people will basically comment as to what they think the song is about.
Yep.
It's interesting to hear other people's perspectives. And I looked on that website for this song, and the debate that was going on that webpage was, in the chorus, he sings, "It's a thing named it in a bottomless pit, you can't see it there," but people were hearing it as it's a thing named id.
Ah,
oh,
right.
Right.
As in, and
ego.
So, and as in id and ego. And so they were pulling all kinds of Freudian analysis on this thing, right?
Didn't they read the lyrics? Didn't they do their homework?
And then one person actually said, well, I have the lyric sheet from the CD, and it says it. Well, you know, when we all know that artists don't actually do the printing of the lyrics themselves, that's the record company, whatever. So maybe there was a mistake. Who knows? I mean, and maybe they threw it in just as ambiguously. Maybe he sung it in such a way that it could be interpreted both ways. Mm-hmm. But I just want to grab a couple of excerpts that I found on a different website, which is actually a They Might Be Giants fan website, basically.
Okay.
And
what do they say?
So one person said, "This song speaks to me as a man that they let play the organ, let in quotes. He isn't paying for it, or playing for an audience. Clearly, this man is obsessed with music, so obsessed with music that he sold his car, though he isn't 100% sure. Probably because he's so obsessed with music, he can't remember what he's done. The id is the compulsive side of our mind. The music is a bottomless pit where he throws his mind, his car, and he is falling apart, and so is his life."
Wow. All
so
right.
It's really, really interesting. And there is that second instance in the second chorus where he's talking about, "I must have sold my car when I needed to buy an electric organ." And mm-hmm. someone interpreted that as, quote, "It just occurred to me that the electric organ in the second verse is perhaps not the same organ that the singer played in the first verse, but rather an artificial internal organ, or maybe a pacemaker or something like that." He says, suggests that he must have sold his car when he needed to buy an electric organ. Rarely does anyone need so badly to buy a musical instrument than one is willing to give up one's car in order to do so.
Unless you're the first guy who says he's so obsessed with music he's willing to do that.
You know. What if we had John and John here, the songwriters? What did you find out what they say about the song?
No, and I don't think they're inclined to say.
They're not talking.
They're keeping mum.
They're not talking. And like I said, like a lot of their songs are kind of like this. Like they're obtuse. Yeah. That way.
Well, speaking of obtuse, I think it would be time to move on to another song. Did you end up anything else, Janice, on that one?
I don't. Like I said, I was very confused, but I kind of liked that. I kind of liked not having to think so hard about what it meant, just kind of letting it sink in and feel whatever it made me feel.
Actually, the last one, I'd just like to read this quickly. On the same website, I think this one's actually a little more of the direction you were heading, Janice, in your interpretation.
Yeah.
I think the narrator of the song is lonely and down on his luck. He feels like an outsider. For me, at least, I always hate waiting for rides inside buildings because it feels like everyone there is watching you and wondering what you're still doing there. He wants to go in because it's warmer there or cooler or just a nicer place than to wait outside on the curb alone, but he doesn't want to feel like he doesn't belong. And then the reference to the wooden chair, he said, is probably the most uncomfortable kind of chair there is, and to be sitting alone in a room on a wooden chair staring down the stairs is a pretty lonely place to be. I think he bought the organ because he thought it would make him feel cool and happy. After all, what's cooler than being a professional musician? But of course, it didn't work out because he ended up on the curb waiting alone for his ride because now he doesn't have a car to take himself home. Thus, he ended up making himself feel like an outsider after all, which just becomes a vicious circle.
Goodness.
It must be fun for the two songwriters to read these.
I know.
It must
be. Just really, laughing. Really. They're like, the song is about nothing, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's true. I don't know if you guys have had this experience, you guys and gals, as songwriters. But Janice and Neil and I are songwriters, and once I wrote some songs, I put them on a CD and released them to the world, and then later on the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, it's no longer mine.
Right.
That song is not mine. It's to be interpreted by the people who listen to it, and their interpretation is totally valid.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's a cool thing to do.
It is a cool thing to do. Yeah.
Because I remember a friend of mine saying when I first released it, I was living in Whistler, BC, and he said, your songs give me a structure to feel my own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's great. I don't want you feeling mine. I'm busy. I'm fine. Don't feel mine. Anyway, we're going to talk about MacArthur Park. This is a kind of very unusual and somewhat famous song for people of the era. 1968, written by Jimmy Webb. Jimmy Webb is born in 1946, an American songwriter, composer, and singer. You may know some of his songs, like Up, Up, and Away, recorded by The Association, By the Time I Get to Phoenix and Wichita Lineman, which were huge hits for Glen Campbell, Galveston as well, The Worst That Could Happen, and, of course, MacArthur Park. This song when I was reading up on it, David Letterman was a big fan of the song, and they had a whole show dedicated to this song. They had the cake, and it was melting, and they had he got symphony orchestra in. So I want to give you just a bit of background. The piano score for this, or sheet music for this song, is 10 pages long. It was a 7.5-minute pop song.
Wow.
That got radio airplay. Now, this was the 60s. I don't know that this would happen much these days because Stairway to Heaven was on the radio and a few other exceptions. The standard pop song is between 3 and 3:40. So this was a 7-minute song with orchestration, classical type movements, etc. So we're going to spare you that, and you can go listen to it. It's sung by Richard Harris, who I imitated earlier in the show, an actor, the late Richard Harris, an actor who was not a singer, and
he was a dude who played Dumbledore.
Was he?
No,
yeah,
no,
wasn't
it
he?
Wasn't Richard?
Richard Harris.
Different one?
Dumbledore, which one is
it? In the Harry Potter
movies. Okay, we're going to Google
while
the song plays.
But we digress.
We digress.
So, we're going to give you a version that, I'm not sure the year it came out, but it was the heyday of Donna Summer. That'd be the 80s probably, right? 80s or 90s.
Probably early. It was disco, so maybe late 70s.
Yeah, it's kind of disco here. And Donna Summer did a version of it, and this is this unusual song to a disco beat, so you can dance. If you're out there in radio land, feel free to dance, because we're going to here in the studio. And we're ready to roll this, Neil.
Yes, we are.
Okay, Here's MacArthur Park, written by Jimmy Webb and performed by
Donna Summers.
If you love disco, there's nothing better than Madonna Summers singing MacArthur Park by Jimmy Webb. Over to you, Janice.
All right. For those just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Janice, filling in for Phil on CJRU 1280 AM. And tonight, it's all about unusual lyrics. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, and we'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services that we mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. Coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have some great songwriting guests. July 5th, next Tuesday, is Jules. July 12th, we have TC Folk Punk back in the house. And July 19th, Jeff Greenways here at Sock Talk Radio. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup. It's tomorrow. That's Wednesday, June 29th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Transect Club. It's free to join on meetup and free to attend the roundtable. You can stop by songtalk.ca/meetup. for all the details. And don't forget, visit songtalk.ca to follow along with the songs that we're talking about today, the lyrics, because you'll get so much more out of this. And also tweet in some other good examples of songs with unusual lyrics that we haven't covered today. We'd love to hear from you guys at Song Talk Radio. And back to you, Brucey.
Well, thank you, Janice. And so, Neil, I'm going to call on Neil because he's younger than me, so he would not have been exposed to the original MacArthur Park. Were
no,
you
I
even
was
exposed to Donna Summer, so to speak?
I remember Donna Summer. I remember the name. What was her big hit? She had a big hit like in 1979, 1980.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't remember.
That one.
But Google it.
What do you think of these lyrics?
Well, I think it's not quite as obtuse as the previous song because there is a setting. Whether you take it literally or not, I guess, is another question. But there's, I mean, the unusual part. I mean, if you just consider that he's, that the narrator of the song is sort of sitting in a park and observing things, then he's observing some pretty strange things, like the green icing flowing down and someone left out a cake out in the rain. It seems like an unusual thing to be seeing in a park. So it does have a slightly surreal aspect to it. I'm intrigued by the opening verse. Spring was never waiting for us, dear. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. So there's a sense there that maybe the narrator's sitting in this place, and it used to be some place that he had with his ex-lover that they shared, and he's kind of remembering or just sort of being sentimental about that in some way. But yeah, there are some unusual things, and even the idea that he, you know, even if he did see a cake out in the rain, it's kind of interesting that he takes off on it and goes, I don't think I can take it because it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. Like there is a sense of lamenting or loss in here.
Yeah, I definitely got that feel of a sort of breakup. And as I read through the whole lyric, MacArthur's Park, it seemed to represent, you know, all of these great memories about, you know, recalling the yellow cotton dress and the ground beneath your knees and these old men playing Chinese checkers. And it was all very kind of lovely. But now it's melting, meaning the romance or probably the relationship that they had is melting in the dark. It's, you know, they've broken up. Someone left the cake out in the rain and I took so long to bake it. Perhaps that's just the relationship was, you know, they were together for so long and I'll never have that recipe again. You know, how will I get over this kind of sorrow? And it's interesting, Bruce.
Would you have thought of that without me telling you earlier about what Jimmy was writing about?
Well, the thing is that I took it as a metaphor, and when you explained, before we started the show, that it actually wasn't, I was like, what? But what I got out of it, though, as a songwriter, was that if I wanted to try and write an unusual lyric, using these kinds of metaphors would be a great way to go about it. So,
well, Jimmy and I are very close, you know. I went on that wonderful thing called the World Wide Web, and I learned a little bit. There was an article here. MacArthur Park was a restaurant on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, where Jimmy Webb was actually located, where he was living and writing in the 60s and wrote a lot of hits there. He didn't become a big hit as a singer. However, he provided songs for other people that became very, very popular. He says everything in the song is visible. Nothing's fabricated. There were old
men playing. there was a cake
melting
in the rain.
Checkers. The cake was left out in the rain.
You can see him got a couple guys playing checkers.
And he calls it a musical collage of a love affair that went down at MacArthur Park Restaurant. And so it was a sad time for him. He wrote, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, because he was thinking of going back to his home in Oklahoma, because he was, I guess there was some sadness in L.A., and he was maybe not feeling great. He wanted to go home, which was Oklahoma for him.
Okay.
And the other thing that came up was it was a challenge. It was a challenge from a producer he knew that says, could you write a classically oriented piece that could be played on the radio? And he said, okay, why not? Let's try. His wife also, Jimmy Webb's wife, always is Her name is Savani, and she's a public television producer. And she's always asked, 5 decades later, she says, everybody meets me. They go, what is this MacArthur Park all about? Anyway, and she says, it's an abstract painting, an impressionist painting.
Yeah.
It's art in a musical form.
Oh, yeah, definitely it is.
You make it what you want to be. Jimmy plays it down, but it's a heartbreaking song when you listen to him sing it. And you hear all the words without the orchestrations. There's a great version on the web, actually, on YouTube, of Jimmy Webb singing this solo with the piano. And
oh, yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
Oh, she said that beautifully, I got to say.
Yeah, that's actually, because there was a lot of visual kind of stuff, right?
Yes.
It does read like a painting. But I'm curious, Janice, when you said you originally perceived it as a metaphor, what did you see it as a metaphor for?
Well, I mean, just what I was saying, that MacArthur's Park represented the beautiful relationship that they had in the past that he was very nostalgic for and thinking about in the verses, right? With, you know, the old men playing checkers by the trees, so they're in the park. But then now in the chorus, it's kind of going back to the present where, you know, he's alone, he's sad, he is lamenting this loss. So that's kind of what I interpret it as.
Right. So the cake left out in the rain maybe is a metaphor for the disillusion of the relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
So like,
yeah.
Yeah, and I'll never have that recipe again really feeds into
it's
that.
Over.
Like I may never have that experience again.
Absolutely, or that feeling.
Like, the feeling, yeah.
Right.
Or what is the magic recipe that makes love work or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to give props to Jimmy here just before we move on to our final song. And I've got some facts here that are pretty astounding. His song, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, I believe was Glenn Campbell recorded it, was the third most performed song in the 50 years between 1940 and 1990. The third most performed, measured
most
performed. By BMI.
Okay.
And that means live, I guess.
Yeah.
He's the only artist ever to have received Grammy Awards for music, lyrics, and orchestration.
Wow.
He's in the Songwriters Hall of Fame, the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame, and he's won the National Academy of Songwriters Lifetime Achievement Award. He's a very, very well-respected writer and not well-known. So
yeah.
You can
he's also an author. He's also an author that we keep referencing his book on the show. I forget what it's called now. Toonsmith?
Yes.
Toonsmith?
Toonsmith.
Well, go to songtalk.ca/resources.
Yeah, check out the resources page.
To find out.
Yeah, Toonsmith. He writes a whole book about songwriting. He's quite a professor of songwriting. But check him out.
Go, Jimmy. And also, we did find out that Richard Harris is the Richard Harris Dumbledore.
Yes. He was Dumbledore.
He was the second Dumbledore after the first actor had passed away. Anyway.
All right. Well, we have another song.
We
Janice,
do have
do
one
have
more. We have Paranoid Android by Radiohead. Very interesting song. And I'll just set it up by actually asking you to notice the music behind it. Because it was actually inspired by what John Lennon had done for the Beatles song, Happiness is a Warm Gun, where he had put three sections of different songs together. And so with this song, Paranoid Android, Radiohead actually fused together parts from three different half-finished songs, each written by a different member of the band. So when you're listening to the song, like, you know, perk your ears for those changes in the music, which is pretty cool.
And if you can spot which section was Tom York's, you win a prize!
Mm-hmm. And just a note, for the sake of brevity, we're playing back an edited version of the song. I cut out a lot of the long instrumental sections.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was originally 6 minutes and 24 seconds. Now, just over 5.
Just over 5. Cool.
All
okay.
Right. All right. Listen.
Stop the noise, I'm trying to get somewhere.
You're listening to CJRU 1280 AM, broadcasting from the Ryerson University campus. And over to you, Janice.
Wow. So this song was Paranoid Android by Radiohead, released in 1997. And it went to number 3 on the UK singles chart. And it's been included on lists of the best songs of all time on a lot of lists. Great tune, obviously, with some pretty unusual lyrics. And some critics have compared this song to Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, which was actually used as a reference point for the band while they were writing the song. And Paranoid Android, the title actually comes from Marvin, the paranoid android from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So what did you guys think?
Wow, this is like... bad things are happening, man. It's Armageddon time. Yeah. And, it's this up against the wall. There was an old expression, which I can't say on the radio, up against the wall, you in the 60s. And it's kind of, it feels like that revolutionary Gucci pig and the yuppies networking and you should be shot. Stop the noise, off with his head. It sounds a bit like incitement to a revolution against,
right.
I'm not sure what, though.
The man.
Again, I don't know what it means. I mean, in the sense of what the narrative is, certainly from the music and from the lyrics, you get a kind of anger, the panic, the vomit, rain down from a great height, and the music's very gutsy and bold, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the middle there, they just sort of rock out. Very clearly, 3 different sections there. It's not Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm sorry, Tom.
Well, no, I think they just took it as a point of departure to say, can we do a song that's not, you know, typical verse chorus and kind of in 3 different sections?
You want to stretch a bit, right?
It worked, though. Okay. For me, it did.
Neil, what did you think?
Well, this is one of the album that this comes off of is called OK Computer, 1996-7, and as far as I'm concerned, the best album of the 90s. So I've been listening to this song for a very, very long time, and I never knew what it was really about. I just really loved the lines like, when I am king, you'll be first against the wall. Like, that's just kind of, it's got this menace to it. Which is really cool. And ambition makes you look pretty ugly, kicking and squealing Gucci little piggy. And actually, I did do a little bit of research this afternoon on this song, and I found out that, I don't know if it was Tom York or one of the other band members, but they were in a...
in a bar.
They were in a bar.
It
was Tom, and he accidentally spilled a drink on this lady, and she kind of flipped out on him for just accidentally spilling this drink. And so that was, you know, and he's describing her as a kicking and squealing Gucci little piggy.
Yeah, he apparently had this very unpleasant experience at a bar in L.A., and there was, like, a whole bunch of people around him, strangers who were high in cocaine, and, this woman, he became really frightened by her because she became really violent after apparently someone, or maybe it was him, spilled a drink on her, and felt like she had this almost inhuman kind of a look in her eye, and so that's kind of where this song was born, but it seems if you read, various quotes from the band members and interviews and stuff, that it kind of became more of a joke and something that was just for fun, for them to just get wasted a couple nights and just throw a whole bunch of these different songs together.
Yeah.
He wrote most of the lyrics.
Right. Well, it just goes to show that if you got a little story like that, you can incorporate it. It doesn't have to be the entirety of the song.
It could just be a piece
of it.
And it's just interesting how the lyrics that kind of grab you, it can still make that impact, even if it doesn't necessarily make sense per se, or if it, hasn't really, the whole thing isn't really reflective of an actual story or, really intentional, but that those lines can still be really powerful and moving. And maybe it is the fact that they aren't so kind of... straightforward.
Mm-hmm. And for all of the kind of ugliness and menace of the most of the lyric, it ends off with God loves his children. Yeah. it ends on kind of a bit of a more gentle.
Yeah.
And the music reflects that as well.
Yeah, and I also looked up people's interpretations of the song, just like you were saying, Neil, on that website, songmeanings.com. Mm-hmm. And it is really interesting that even if for the band it didn't have all those interpretations, the song can grow to have such a you know, deep meaning for different people in different ways. And I think that's kind of the beauty of these unusual lyrics of these different songs, is that they can still really impact and mean something to people.
Mm-hmm. Any ones that struck you as interesting? Any interpretations?
Oh, well, yeah, one person said, you know, it's about a person who's been bullied and is getting his revenge against his tormentors.
Oh.
Another one, you know, pointed out that it's an anti sort of yuppie song.
Or yeah, I can see that.
Against the man. Or, you know, one person said, you know, it's about someone attempting to live the quiet life, but they're constantly being confronted with sort of the messiness of life. But mm-hmm. I think with the impression that you got, Bruce, of it just being total chaos and, you know, sort of this revolutionary feeling, mm-hmm. you know, really came out strongly in the lyrics.
Didn't
and the
yuppies
music.
Make him rich?
Well, you know, minor details, Bruce.
Whoever bought the music.
Bought Radiohead, wouldn't they?
Because the other thing, too, if you actually go to YouTube and look up the music video for the song, it's all animated, and it is really, really messed up.
It is parental discretion.
Parental discretion.
Yeah.
Apparently MTV banned it.
And
is that what you have up there?
No, it's not.
And actually, the story behind that is interesting, too, because the person who created it, they're a creator of the animated series called Robin. So he was asked by Radiohead to make the music video, and what he did was he jotted down visual ideas while listening to the song on repeat for like 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is that he didn't have access to the lyrics at the time. The band purposely didn't give it to him because they didn't want the video to be too literal. And so when you watch the video, I mean, it also doesn't make sense.
Wait a minute. They gave him only
the music?
The
music.
The instrumental version.
Yeah.
Wow,
right?
That is very cool.
Very cool.
But they really loved kind of the end product.
That reminds me of this, I don't really call it an exercise, but I was jamming with a couple of guys. I was literally like 17 years old all the time in high school. And we were just jamming. And one of the things we did was the guy who was singing, and he just started singing whatever came to his mind in the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I would jot down what I thought he was saying.
Ah.
And it wasn't exactly what he was saying, but he was just blurbing out a bunch of consonants and vowels, essentially. And I just wrote up some words. I think he's saying this. And I just jotted it down. And that became lyric for the song. It was complete nonsense. Right? But it was kind of a cool exercise just to go through that.
Well, I think the lesson here for me, and perhaps to share with our listeners, is let go of all restraints when you're writing, as a songwriter, especially when you're a beginning songwriter and it's just pouring out of you and you've got all kinds of ideas. You know, let go. Let whatever's coming out, get it at least on the page and into your guitar or your piano and see what happens.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, we had a writer on here recently who said his job is to communicate an emotion to the audience so they'll feel it. Not necessarily. That's one purpose of writing a song.
Mm.
You can write a song simply because it amuses you to play with ideas.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And when you look at a world like visual art, I mean, you can have a still life painting or you can have more abstract paintings, right? So you can think of songwriting and lyric writing in the same sense. Like, it doesn't always have to be something that's literal in the real world. It could be, you know, it can be a dream. It can be an emotion.
That is the beauty of art.
And then that's, to me, is what makes it art.
And as Neil says, I never listen to the lyrics anyway.
Yeah, for the most part.
I mean, it's true. I'm primarily a lyricist. I sweated my lyrics over many years. I met so many people who said, no, I don't really listen to them. I like the beat and the melody. And that's fine, because I know there are people out there who really love the lyrics.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they read the liner notes, and they have the thing there, and they're literally following along.
And sorry, Neil.
Yeah, I'm just getting back to your original question of Janice about genre. I mean, a lot of the music I listen to tends to be guitar-driven hard rock,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the songs are kind of like this. Like, they're kind of obtuse. So the lyrics are certainly secondary to whatever the band is doing.
Secondary? Don't say that to a lyricist. Lyrics first. How are we doing for time, Neil?
We are dwindling.
Dwindling? Should we be wrapping up?
We should
it
be
up
wrapping
now?
Up, I think.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up. You've been listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Phil.
And filling in for Phil tonight was Janice Ho. Send us your impressions after the show if you like at Song Talk Radio on Twitter. Email is feedback@songtalk.ca. We got your Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio. Stop by the site, songtalk.ca, and listen to this. You can subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And there's even more. Don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. There's a great article by Janice Ho in The Current podcast. edition there. You can find links to all of the products, books, and web services we mention on Song Talk Radio right on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. And remember, if you're in the Toronto area, especially around Bathurst and
Bloor.
Spadina, Bathurst and Bloor around that, Spadina and Bloor, it's the Songwriters Roundtable Meetup. That's tomorrow, Wednesday, June 29th, 7 to 10. I'll be there. Will you be there, Neil?
I will not be there, sorry.
Aw, I'll be there, and I guess maybe Eric will be there. And it's at the Transact Club. It's free to join on Meetup, and then you come on out. It's free to attend. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details. We would like to thank CJRU 1280 AM for their support. We'd like to thank Janice Ho for sitting in for Phil Emery. Thanks to Nicole Di Donato for making lots of noise in the social media world. And finally, we'd like to thank you, the AM or podcast listener. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
MondoArt.
Phil is at Focus Creative. Janice is at
Janice Ho Tweets.
And that's H-O Tweets. Bruce is at Bruce Harrett. Nicole is at
Nicole K. Di Donato.
Nicole K. D-I Donato. And please stop by the website again at songtalk.ca. Browse the past shows and find out how you could be a guest on our show. Good night, everyone.
Good night.